40 greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Let's kick off in Madrid, Spain. That's where Atletico Madrid is hosting Bayern Munich of Germany later Wednesday evening in a first-leg UEFA Champions League semifinal. Our longtime VOA football fans might remember this is a rematch of the 1974 European Cup final. That was the first European Cup title game to require a replay after the first match was drawn 1-1 after extra time. Bayern Munich won the replay 4-0. It was the first of five European championships for the proud German club. Atletico also finished runner-up in 2014 when it lost 4-1 in extra time to city rival Real Madrid in Lisbon, Portugal. In action Tuesday, 10-time champion Real Madrid, the grandmaster of European soccer, played a scoreless draw against host Manchester City in the first leg of the other UEFA Champions League semifinal. Now, Real Madrid coped well without injured Portuguese star Cristiano Ronaldo, who did not play because of a thigh injury. Real also played the second half without Frenchman Karim Benzema, depriving the Spanish power of its two most potent strikers. However, Manchester City, making its first semifinal appearance in European football's elite competition, couldn't capitalize. Man City fans can also thank goalkeeper Joe Hart, who made late saves on shots by Casemiro and Pepe. The second leg will be played next week in Madrid. In Olympic news, two-time Olympic hurdles champion Felix Sanchez of the Dominican Republic has announced his retirement at age 38 and will not compete at the Rio Games in August. Sanchez was born in New York City to parents from the Dominican Republic, and he was raised in San Diego, California. But Felix decided to represent the Dominican Republic internationally, and he made his debut for that country at the 1999 Pan Am Games. Between 2001 and 2004, Sanchez won 43 races in a row in the 400-meter hurdles, helping him earn the nicknames Super Felix, the Invincible, and Superman. Also in 2004, Super Felix won his first Olympic gold medal in the 400-meter hurdles at the Athens Games. And Felix would win gold again at the 2012 London Olympics. Now, Super Felix is well-loved in the Dominican Republic. In fact, the 60,000-seat Felix Sanchez Olympic Stadium in the capital, Santo Domingo, is named after him. In more Olympic news, Getty Images staff sports photographer Matthew Stockman is in Rio de Janeiro preparing for his 9th Olympic Games. During a recent appearance on the Sunny Side of Sports, I asked Matthew, do you have any Olympic memories that really stick out in your mind?
You know, one that really sticks out in my mind, I remember in the Sydney Olympics,
the U.S. baseball team, and they did win the gold medal. But, you know, Tommy Lasorda was the coach. It was all young kids playing, young men. And it was just great to see them, you know, the excitement when they actually won it. I think that says a lot about the games. It's, they weren't necessarily stars at the time, and they, you know, they win the gold medal, they're playing for the country, and they had a great time doing it. I think you see those moments quite a bit, actually, in the Olympics, and not just U.S. athletes, across the board. You know, they're ordinary people doing extraordinary things, and it's great to see.
What really attracts you to Rio, Matthew, in terms of this Olympics? Golf and rugby sevens will be making their return to the Olympics. Are you interested in shooting those competitions?
I probably will not be at the golf. We have golf specialists that are coming in that will actually cover the golf tournament. I have seen the golf course. We did some aerials about a month ago of the course, and it looks very nice. I think what attracts me to Rio, photographically, the city's beautiful. It's a beautiful environment to have the games. You know, you have the bay, the beaches, the Cristo, you have Sugarloaf Mountain. It just, the city's just loaded with visuals.
Getting back to the golf, Matthew, I understand the course has been built near what's called an alligator lagoon. Have you spotted any alligators in your wanderings?
No, I haven't. And the neighborhood it's in, and I'm my Portuguese is not the best, but it's Junque da Pagua. I think that's how you pronounce it, which basically does mean alligator lagoon. I've yet to see one. I asked the same thing, and I've yet to see one.
Matthew, as Getty photographers take pictures at the Olympics, there will be tremendous pressure to get those images processed and made available to clients and customers quickly. Can you walk us through the workflow from setting up for the shot, taking the photo, and then processing it?
Sure. It's actually it's quite amazing what our technical people have put together for us as photographers. For me, you know, arriving to an event and setting up. Obviously, with the Olympics, quite a few of the positions are fixed. There's not as much roaming that you would have freedom of movement within a venue like you would, say, a traditional event. A lot of the spaces are pretty well defined. Because of that, our agency, as well as some of the other major global agencies, are participating in all the venues are wired as a VLAN. It's a fiber optic system that moves the images back to our editing in our office. So we can actually send from the camera. We plug in, and we can send from directly from the camera. We can go from someone winning the winning moment, and 120 seconds later, it is delivered to on a newspaper editor's desk. Our website, I guess, is the best way.
That's amazing in terms of the turnaround.
Yes, it is. It's actually, and it works. it blows my mind that you can be in Maracanã Stadium and our editor is in Baja, that's 20 kilometers away, and the end user is in London, and in 120 seconds, it's there. It's pretty mind-blowing, the technology. But it's the world we live in now. Keeping up with the Joneses, we move over 5,000 images a day. So it's a lot of imagery getting out there. So, you know, we definitely have to keep the workflow, keep the pace, keep things moving along.
Matthew, maybe you can share some of your expertise with our Voice of America listeners in terms of getting that great shot. Let's say you're out at the Olympic tennis facility and Rafael Nadal is on the court, and you've followed him over the years at other tournaments. Take us through your mindset about, say, Nadal is getting ready to serve. Where are you setting up?
I would cover just how I would normally for a tennis tournament. Obviously, he's a lefty, so I would be on what we would call it. We're probably on a side that takes advantage of it, but he is a lefty, so I could actually get that. In terms of the Olympics, I think that you would want to try to include some sort of signage, something that places him in Rio at the Olympics. The only true signage in the venue are Olympic rings, which is great. So trying to actually position him so there's actually some sort of rings or some sort of Olympic icon in the background would be terrific.
That's Matthew Stockman, Getty Images staff sports photographer. And Matthew was talking with me by telephone from the Olympic city of Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. And this Olympic note, Getty Images is the official photographic agency of the International Olympic Committee. Here's also a programming note for our Voice of America listeners. My special guest on Friday's show is the old sports emperor, Barry Mon, who retired from the VOA in 1999, but is still fondly remembered for his royal and sporty reign as host of the Sports Journal radio show. The old sports emperor, Barry Mon, my special guest on Friday.
Hey, g'day, mates. Remember me? This is the old sports emperor with a red-hot listening tip. That's right. Give a listen to my pal, the bright and lively Sunny Man on the sunny side of sports, right here on the Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. Dr. Larry Zamoja here, Chairman, Chief Executive, Sports Radio 88.9 Brila FM. Keep getting spotty sunshine with Sunny Young. We all do at Sports Radio 88.9 Brila FM, broadcasting out of the cities of Lagos, Abuja, Kaduna, and Onitsha in Nigeria, as well as the World Wide Web on www.brilafm.net. I tell you this. It's always a thrill, yes, a thrill, to remain on the sunny side on Brilla with Sunny. Keep listening, Africa.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
More Olympic news now. Ethiopia's Kenenisa Bekele has to be considered one of Africa's greatest ever Olympians. Kenenisa won two medals at the 2004 Athens Olympics and two more at the 2008 Beijing Olympics. Let's break it down for our VOA Olympic fans. In Athens, Kenenisa won gold at 10,000 meters and a silver at 5,000 meters. And in Beijing, Kenenisa captured gold at both 5,000 meters and 10,000 meters, the two distances where he's also the world record holder. Now 33 years old, Kenenisa Bekele has moved up to the marathon distance, and he's hoping his recent performance in London will book him a ticket to Rio. After being sidelined almost a year because of injury, Kenenisa clocked 2 hours, 6 minutes, and 36 seconds, finishing in third place behind the Kenyans Eliud Kipchoge and Stanley Biwott. The energetic Andy Edwards caught up with Kenenisa after his outstanding performance in the London Marathon. Here's Andy.
Kenenisa Bekele, after a tremendous third place in London Marathon, have you been surprised? Many people thought all the injuries you had, you wouldn't be able to run like this, but you did.
Maybe people who doesn't know my training and know my situation, they are surprised, but you know, for me it was not surprising, you know, because I couldn't expect this result. You know, I want to improve, you know, still this result. Anyway, there is also some missing my training.
You missed some training, but yeah. I mean, I know it's soon after the race, but looking ahead, if you go to the Olympics in Rio, do you feel you'd be a contender for an Olympic title in the marathon?
Who knows, because there is enough time, you know. Of course, if injury not disturbing me, of course, I will improve much better than this result.
Just one last question. 13 years ago, Eliud Kipchoge beat you to the 5,000-meter title in the track at the World Championships in Paris. What does it feel like running against him now, 13 years on?
You know, this is marathon race, that difference. So Of course, not only that race, you know, how many times we raced with Eliud Kipchoge, you know, more than 10 times. Maybe he beaten me twice, three times. But, you know, I've beaten him more than 10. So this is different race. And he prepared well. He's experienced a marathon, you know. He entered before me, and there is no injury with him. But, you know, for me, you know, 5-4 years out with injury, this result was not bad.
Not bad at all. Kenenisa Bekele, third in the London Marathon. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Voice of America.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Getting back to Kenenisa Bekele, in addition to those four Olympic medals, three gold and one silver, Kenenisa, truly one of the greatest African runners in history. Let's run down a few of his world championship achievements. Gold medal, Paris 2003, 10,000 meters. Gold medal, Helsinki 2005, 10,000 meters. Gold medal, Osaka 2007, 10,000 meters. Gold medal, Berlin 2009, 5,000 meters. Another gold medal in Berlin 2009 at 10,000 meters. Bronze medal 2003 in Paris, 5,000 meters. I'm hoping we're going to see Kenenisa Bekele running once again in Rio de Janeiro in August. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to be with you.
Good to have you back, Andrew. What's trending in the sports world on this Wednesday?
So yesterday we talked about Chris Paul being injured. We talked about Steph Curry being injured and how fans a lot of times will say, oh, we're cursed, or it's, you know, the fate of the gods against us. Well, it may actually be the case for the LA Clippers, because you have Chris Paul is out for the rest of the season. He broke his hand. He had surgery on that hand. He's out. And Blake Griffin now is also out. He hurt his quad. He's out for the rest of the season. So those two huge stars for the LA Clippers, both out of the playoffs when they probably need them the most. I saw someone tweeted out. They said that ticket sales on the resale market plummeted. You could get tickets for as low as $17.
Oh, my word.
Because those two marquee players were out. So it's really having an impact on the fans for sure. Could have an impact on the team and how well they do. But people are noticing. They're saying that it's a huge blow. And even for fans generally, you may not be a Clippers fan, but just generally watching these playoffs, to have some of these big marquee names not be playing, you're not going to be able to see them, watch them in the playoffs. It's a little bit of a disappointment for a lot of fans on social media.
Awaiting the winner of that Clippers-Portland Trailblazers series, the reigning champion, Golden State Warriors. I imagine if you're a Warriors fan, maybe kind of happy about this injury problem besetting the Clippers right now.
I think so. There's a lot of strategic kind of playing with the schedules and say, okay, who are we going to play next? How's their team looking? Especially for Golden State, you know, they're always thinking to that next step because they're gunning for the championship. They want to repeat. Everybody's focused on that, is from what I've seen on social media. Certainly their fans are. They'd like them to repeat. So they're kind of being strategic about who they're going to play next. If they have to play a Clippers team that maybe has a couple injuries, a couple big injuries for that team, it might be an easy ride for them.
Andrew, let me quickly recap the two playoff games on Tuesday night in the NBA playoffs. The Toronto Raptors edged the Indiana Pacers 102-99. The Raptors now lead that first round series 3-2. And in the other game on Tuesday night, The Atlanta Hawks soared past the Boston Celtics 110-83. The Hawks lead that series 3-2. And all of these series in the NBA playoffs, the first team to win 4 games advances. Andrew, what else is trending in the sports world?
Well, this is something, a video that I saw trending that's about sports journalism, particularly women in sports journalism. It's these two women, Sarah Spain and Julie DeCaro. They're both sports journalists. And they faced on social media a lot of criticism, a lot of backlash, and a lot of just cruel tweets that have been thrown at them. And what this organization did, it's called Not Just Sports. They kind of look at general sports stories. They did this video called hashtag More Than Mean. And they had these gentlemen come in, sit down with these two sports reporters and read out some of these mean tweets. Now, it starts out and it's kind of funny that, oh, you know, she doesn't know what she's talking about, whatever. And it gets very cruel very quickly, the foul language that people use, the terrible things that people say. And these guys have to sit there and read this to these women, these sports journalists that these tweets are directed at. And it gets very uncomfortable as you watch this. It's about 4.5 minutes long, this video. And the point of this, they say, is to show that women in sports get a lot of criticism, unfair criticism, and not just criticism, just terrible things that are thrown at them, especially kind of under the anonymity of social media. So they're really highlighting this. This has gone kind of viral, this hashtag More Than Mean video. This isn't the first time we've seen this. There was a sports reporter who covers the New York Mets, and she kind of went on a Twitter rant and a series of tweets saying that, you know, she said this thrown at her, this thrown at her. She said the people have said these terrible things. So it really is an issue that deserves to be highlighted and something that shouldn't continue. And so hopefully this video helps to do that. But it is going viral. People are commenting on it saying, wow, I really didn't realize kind of some of the terrible things that women in sports, female journalists in sports face.
Andrew, do you think this campaign will help perhaps female journalists in the sports world and elsewhere maybe become more active on social media if they're not, you know, susceptible to these type of this intimidation on the web?
I hope so. I think that this drawing attention to this and shedding light on these issues, because I think a lot of people don't realize this. They make these kind of jokes offhand. Maybe it's not to the extent of the language that some of these people are using, but people might reconsider that now and say, wait a minute, these jokes are part of this broader trend where they're getting criticized merely because they're a woman. There's no reason why, just because it's a female sports writer, that they're not going to be just as capable or, you know, just as good. In fact, some of the sports writers I read and really enjoy are women, and I think they're better than some of the men out there. So I hope that it gets more women sports writers on social media. I hope that the criticism and the language and the, you know, unjust attacks against them stop.
Andrew, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. And my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. I retweeted a tweet on Tuesday, and I quoted Emil Zatopek, the great Czech runner. He had a quote that said, "An athlete cannot run with money in his pockets. He must run with hope in his heart and dreams in his head." And it reminded me, Andrew, of what you were talking about at the London Marathon. Andrew talked about a runner with a wedding ring in his pocket and perhaps love in his heart.
Yes, certainly. Getting, you know, proposing to his girlfriend at the finish line, had carried that engagement ring all 26.2 miles. I saw there was quite a lot of interest about that on Twitter after we talked about it on the show. We tweeted about it. We were having a little Twitter back and forth, and I tweeted, I said, spoiler alert, she said yes, so it worked out. But no, it's, you know, stories like that are always ones that do well on social media. They're kind of combine athletics and sports and human interest, and certainly this story did. It was one that a lot of people thought was heartwarming, and a lot of, you know, some jokes being made. Oh, good thing he didn't drop the ring, or else he'd be really, you know, confused when he, you know, got down on one knee and pulled out, you know, nothing out of his pocket. But a nice story all around, a nice social media story.
Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks very much, Sonny.
And that wraps up the April 27th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to VOA producer Bill Werkinger, VOA engineer Nelson Lopes. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The 2015 Country Reports on Human Rights Practices, issued by the State Department in mid-April, saw the continuation of a disturbing trend, that of tightening of restrictions on civil society and private citizens, particularly journalists and voices of the opposition. In every part of the world, we see an accelerating trend by both state and non-state actors to close the space for civil society, to stifle media and internet freedom, to marginalize opposition voices, and in the most extreme cases, to kill people or drive them from their homes, wrote Secretary of State John Kerry in the report's introduction. The report noted that a number of authoritarian governments attempted to stifle civil society and activists both through harassment, intimidation, detention, and restrictions on their ability to operate, as well as by implementing very broad counterterrorism or national security laws to control the freedom to assemble and to suppress dissent, and by increasing the bureaucratic obstacles non-governmental organizations had to navigate. Such governments stifle civil society because they fear public scrutiny. To justify their repressive actions, they present a variety of excuses. They may point out that civil society is not elected and is therefore not representative or accountable, that foreign NGOs undermine national sovereignty, or that regulating civil society is necessary to prevent financing of terrorism. However, such arguments become moot, according to the report, when one realizes that civil society does not have the power to force people into obeying their decisions, and that it is influential because it reflects a grassroots need within a community. The report notes also that terrorist groups like Daesh make efforts to drive off, shut down, or kill civil society activists as soon as they take control of a community. According to the report, terrorist groups take such action because local grassroots civil society organizations can sometimes stand up against violent extremists more effectively than a government security agency. In his remarks at the rollout of the publication, Secretary Kerry said, "The choice some governments offer between freedom and stability is thus a false one, for freedom is the foundation for lasting stability." Kerry concluded that the frequently grim examples detailed in this report strengthen our resolve to promote fundamental freedoms, to support human rights defenders, and to document and promote accountability for violations of human rights.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the politics of South Sudan, reconciling and uniting the nation. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Can't AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.